question that goes up before me. Where's my magic story of a life? Sometimes words can serve me well, sometimes words can go to hell for all that they do. And for every dream that took me high, there's been a dream that's passed me by. I know it's so true, and I can see it clear out to the end. And I'll whisper to her now again, because she shared my life. Far more than all the ghosts of glory, she makes up the story. She's the only story of my life.
Don't worry, Christy, it gets better. Harry Chapin, Story of a Life. And I'm sure we'll be featuring more Harry Chapin as the whole world proceeds. Charles Boxer versus Cannes is now online for your viewing pleasure. Maybe we should have started off with this as opposed to looking at the excitement of the Jaguar sketch, or indeed the Bone FM scenario there, which is obviously for boneheads everywhere. Really tremendous. Who possibly might be online now to talk to us about the two-man unibrow sketch comedy that is Charles, as sung many times as an outstanding sort of piece of wonderful entertainment by no lesser personage than Phil Dearness? Well, I think it would be one of the Charles. Charles Stockman, how are you, Charlie?
I'm good.
Good.
Happy we're both here now.
Hey! Armstrong. For a moment, I thought you guys were trying to follow in the footsteps of Ethan Detmire and say, no, we're not here. Just go on answer phone. You know, it's live. They're only English. You know, the British, they don't understand. Anyway, it's Scotland we're doing. We're not worried about England. Guys, welcome. Charles.
No.
That's Charles Armstrong and Charlie Stockman. You would have cut this earlier in the show. You can obviously catch the podcast later. But Christy, your response to the Jaguar sketch?
I was laughing so hard when I was watching that. I had makeup running down my face.
Laughing so hard, it made her mascara run down the face. What can you say? That's the kind of power of Charles' unibrow sketch comedy.
The goal in any sketch is to make it so that an audience member, after the fact, can't tell if they were laughing or crying. Uh-huh. That's sort of the end game with every one of the pieces that we write.
Well, I think the real goal is to spawn a new brand of mascara that is Charles Comedy Proof.
Yeah, we're big hooked up with the mascara lobby out here, so that's sort of always been our end game.
It could be one of those wonderful transatlantic relationships where we could actually build the Charles Proof mascara. It's wonderful. And of course, I thought we couldn't go through the program without featuring the sensational radio sketch, which had a certain amount of piquancy to it in so many ways, where you get that bonehead FM strike and you know, I almost thought as though you'd actually done it as a docudrama. Really, guys, it's just amazing, you know. Talk radio.
Well, we weren't sure with the decided somewhat lack of commercial interest in our understanding of the lack of commercial interest in British radio, we weren't sure if that would resonate quite as well. Wouldn't have the ubiquity of utter vapid morning drive time radio DJ talk shows. So we're glad to know that you guys are experiencing a similar wasteland to what we get out here.
If you'd like some vapid morning drive time shows, we could point you in the direction, couldn't we? Yeah, Christy's nodding, and so is Katie. Christy and Katie. It's like it's the Charles and Katie and Christy. I feel as though I'm just having to hold the whole thing together. Box versus Can. Hot Wings. Again, interesting in its own way. Animated, a whole new world on this particular area, particularly the fact that Box eventually sort of takes the whole thing and goes PCP on us, but it's extraordinary. I mean, you could just look at Box versus Can, simple, and yet strangely effective.
I would certainly recommend watching it to understand what it's about.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's a classic tale about
a box, two
receptacles.
Yeah.
It's kind of, you know, as we made reference in the video, it's sort of a modern retelling of the legend of Popeye. You know, whereby ingesting a substance, the character is able to just gain a preposterous amount of superhuman strength. In this case, we've substituted PCP for spinach, but the
easily confused. You know, how often olive oil, you know, and Bluto, you know, they were sort of working for the whole thing, and there's Popeye, I am what I am, and he goes for the spinach as opposed to the PCP. You get a different kind of hallucination. Don't try it at home. It's not good. It's not big, and it's not clever. You came on our radar originally through the Leonis Meister, for it is that sobriquet that we used to refer to for Leonis, who was already devastated by the fact that we didn't manage to get anything other than Full Metal voicemail, as far as Ethan Detmeyer is concerned. I don't know, we built this guy up with the A-Team and everything else. Anyway, enough of such stuff. You came on our radar because of Moby Dick in Space, which you've decided to switch.
That's right.
Yeah. Not just that, it's going to be Moby Dick in Edinburgh.
That's right. Well, it's technically, the show is called Moby Alpha, which is a, you know, it's a, in space, 900 years in the future, we swap the space, you know, the whale for a amorphous cluster of energy just sort of floating in space. This one, this cloud happens to be named Moby Alpha. We thought using a Greek letter seemed more spacey than the word dick.
Does he actually get chased around the Antarian Nebula until he's given up? So it's a Star Trek Wrath of Khan reference there. You know.
He
tasks me. He tasks me, and I will have him.
Yeah. We don't want to give any big Moby Dick spoilers.
Of course.
Here. I know it's, people have only had about 250 years to catch up on the novel.
Yeah.
We've made a few changes, but we can say that, no, the energy clouds, the space energy clouds, you know, he does not give up. I'll say he puts up a good fight to the last.
Yeah.
Now, Christy, as well as being an ACE Honours graduate in the subject of English, you know, so you know, hopefully it's understandable to all our American cousins, otherwise it's pointless doing these links, let's face it. Christy, you have become a keen Moby Dick fan because you studied Moby Dick in full force, did you not?
Yeah, and now that I think about it, because, like, it is such a metaphor for the American dream, and the American dream kind of comes from that idea of moving across the frontier. I think that taking it to the final frontier, which is space, is obviously perfect.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's an excellent reading. It also allows us to make a bunch of dumb jokes about classic science fiction. So it's both one and the same. The literary reading and the easy means of writing cheap jokes is also sort of the other side of that pendulum.
I do have a question for you, actually, because I asked this to
Charles do you have a question for? Is it Charles Armstrong? Oh, Charlie Stockman. I'm very confused.
Either can answer. I often ask this question to comedians when they come on our show, because I always like to know, do people, when they meet you and they're friends with you, expect you to be funny all the time because they know what you do for a living?
Well, I think the most common circumstance is when, it's the first time they've met you, and then somebody, usually your friends, because they know what's coming, inform everyone that you're a comedian.
Oh,
and at that point, there's
no
expectation
pressure.
Of
right.
Delivering a joke or just being funny, which is hard to do on...
Exactly. You know, you've got a whole team of writers putting the thing together to get this dynamism. I mean, you can't order genius on demand. You know, a person can't decide today I will be brilliant and tell jokes. You know, it's please.
It's like hiring an artist and inviting them around your house for a party and expecting them to paint your living room, isn't it, really?
Exactly. For free.
Yeah.
Having said that, that's not a good idea, is it, really? I mean, we could have some... No, any artists out there who are looking... I've just seen Can Number 2 wins. It was the Can who won the second challenge. HMS Surprise. Very good. Sorry, I'm just taken away by Box and Can, and quite literally, HMS Surprise is in there. So, stepping in... I mean, clearly, comedy, tragedy, two sides of the same BAFTA award-winning
mask that people actually win, which I'm sure you guys will be winning before too long. Was it a case of you felt more comedic? Did you gravitate more to comedy? Because clearly you've also gone down a storm at the Los Angeles Breakfast Club as well. So, you know, from there to Edinburgh, it's a piece of cake.
The Los Angeles Breakfast Club is a social organization of mostly comprising retirees. Mm-hmm. So I think it'll be a pretty easy transition from that show that we did last week over to the Edinburgh Fringe. We understand it's mostly Edinburgh and the Fringe. It's largely a sort of a low-key kind of retirement community, right?
Look, just do not mention the word separation. Or indeed, other words you shouldn't mention when you're actually in Scotland, possibly referendum, that shouldn't be mentioned. Maybe David Cameron, that wouldn't go down too well, even though it sounds Scottish, you'd think you'd be okay. Nicola Sturgeon, you could probably mention without talking about the fish. I think you should be okay. I mean, and also Edinburgh is not really Scotland. Sorry, Edinburgh, but it isn't. Let's face it. I mean, the capital of Scotland, but it's not really.
It's kind of London North.
It's like London of the North. You know, think of it as London of the North. That's the key. But again, don't
London of the North.
Yeah, don't say that on stage. You could be lucky to get out alive. You've performed with respect to, San Francisco, Seattle, Chicago, Toronto, Los Angeles comedy festivals, the People's Improv Theatre in New York, the Toronto, Victoria, Winnipeg and Edmonton Fringe festivals, and the UCB Los Angeles, the Groundings Main Stage. I mean, you've managed to get around. Is this the first time you're making your way to Europe, guys?
No, not Europe. The first time we've performed in... we both backpacked a little bit around Europe and the UK, but this is the first time we are performing in Europe as a comedic entity. That's probably what your question
was. It was, exactly. It's telepathy working so well here. I can sense that it's coming across the airways. And Christy, you'd be pleased to know we forgot to mention that Jaguar won the Audience Choice Award in the 2014 Seattle comedy film.
I'm sure the people on the board that were sorting out that award were crying makeup too.
They would be, yeah, exactly. In fact, I'm surprised you haven't added that onto the site, guys, because, you know, it'll make you cry your makeup. Moby Alpha. It's every so often we just go surreal into all sorts of ways, etc. We have the story of a mad captain's quest for revenge on the amorphous spatial energy cloud that temporarily took his leg. According to Edmonton Sun, a clever satire that manages to prank sci-fi and classical culture in the same trip. Sounds perfectly sort of wonderful from that point of view. An hilarious homage to classic sci-fi and bombastic literature, Moby Alpha tells the story of a mad captain's quest for revenge on the amorphous spatial energy cloud that temporarily took his leg, as we've said. More simply, Moby Dick. Moby Alpha is Moby Dick in space, but funny. I see, until we got to that stage, I thought Herman Melville would be really pleased to see that. He'd be looking down from above, or whichever spatial world he's based in, and thinking, yes, that's what Call Me Ishmael was wanting to start off with. You know, kick that whole thing off then, Moby Alpha. You know, I'm sure he would have tried to put in a few laughs. I mean, what did you think, Christy? You studied did you think Melvin was going for a
Yeah, I definitely think NASA should change their protocol to from Houston we have a problem to Ishmael we have a problem. I think that'd be quite good.
Nice. You could have that as a free line to work in. Ishmael, we have a problem. Just take that, Tom Hanks.
He's quite isolated out there. If we have a problem, that would imply that Ishmael is competent enough to fix the problem. He really isn't just either Moby Alpha or Moby Dick, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah.
He's such a neophyte.
We have to ask the question, when is the movie going to be made, and are you actually signing up Phil Lynas to direct the whole sequence? I mean, we're looking at the preview here of you guys on stage, Moby Alpha coming through there. We're seeing the shapes sort of coming through. This needs more than just the Edmonton Sun saying a clever satire that manages to prank science fiction. You know, when are you going to make the movie of this, guys?
Well, we were actually hoping to just turn it into an actual a reality show, which would involve actual space travel. Yeah. So we're going to skip the movie.
Yeah.
All the money is in reality television. You don't have to pay the actors.
Right. You guys remember the show about sending the people on a one-way mission to Mars?
Yes.
We were just going to send the people on a one-way mission into space to hopefully harvest the space whale.
Works for me.
And the winners just get their freedom.
Got to say, classic way in which they're also channeling the William Shatner-esque pause in these answers as well. Did you see that? You know, the kind of pause in which suddenly we go beyond the final frontier. That's very good.
Oh, no, well, that's just our lackadaisical West Coast speaking cadence. Everybody out here talks like they're a
Well, I'm the Urban Spaceman, of course, was one of the Bonzo Dog Band's greatest hits, which sadly former Prime Minister Tony Blair actually elected not to choose when he was on the show back in the year 2001 and went for Nothing Compares to You and Sinead O'Connor himself instead. I always felt that Tony Blair was on a down-up from that moment onwards, and yeah, we've been proved right. Katie, have you got any questions for Armstrong and Stockman, otherwise known as Charles and Charlie, Chuck, whatever, the team behind Moby Alpha?
Well, I'm intrigued, for a start. It sounds absolutely fantastic. But what got you into science fiction?
What got us into science fiction?
Mm.
Sorry, was that the question?
Yep.
What got us into science fiction?
Yeah, as opposed to rom-coms, westerns, hardball detective genres. I mean, there's so many things you could do, really.
Yeah, I'll speak for me, and then Charlie can answer if he wants, if it's different. Quite sincerely, it's a genre that lets you explore, you know, a lot of different ideas, a lot of different concepts, and a lot of different worlds, very, you know, sort of simply, and things can be distilled down to their essence to get to the heart of what are basically philosophical questions about our existence are usually the purview of what science fiction is. That's the sort of serious answer. My easier answer is that it looks cool, and it's fun to imagine yourself flying around in space.
Perfect. So many ways.
And my serious answer is that I think like there's a strong similarity between comedy and science fiction in that they frequently both start with a pretty high concept, like wild what if question. In Jaguar, which you've seen, the what if question is what if a man didn't realize that Jaguar produced motor cars as opposed to the Jungle Cat, and in a lot of science fiction it's, you know, what if teleportation existed? So I think it's just that similar desire to take a very strange given and then see what the logical conclusions are.
Guys, I put forward a little song earlier, which you may not have heard of, and I'm going to ask you that question now. The Bonzo Dog Band, I'm the Urban Spaceman. Has that crossed over the Atlantic Ocean? Are you familiar with that little classic?
No, right. Not whatsoever.
Well, I know the meeting's coming up, but if you're happy to stay with us for 2 minutes and 7 English seconds, we can make them American as well, that basically is 127 seconds, we can provide for you, the official Bonzo Dog Band, the tune that former Prime Minister Tony Blair actually rejected in favour of Sinead O'Connor back in 2001. We can provide this for you to kind of appreciate the Bonzo Dogs at their finest with I'm the Urban Spaceman. Are you ready for that, Charles and Charles?
We are ready. That sounds fantastic and thematically relevant.
Monty Python, in fact, although Neil Innes went on to actually do stuff with the Pythons. What did you make of that? Katie Daw, of course.
It's one of my favourites.
One of your favourites. Christy, of course, just letting it chill over the fact that he doesn't exist. But the important thing is, what did the team that are Armstrong and Stockman, charlescomedy.net, what did you make of I'm the Urban Spaceman, guys?
More theremin.
Yeah, needed a lot more theremin in there. That was my biggest takeaway.
A bit more theremin, exactly. Yeah, you can't have too much, really, in terms of the general impact. Yeah, and that was theremin heavy. but needed a little bit more. Yeah, well, there we are. You can always use YouTube to sort of find that. I mean, we could have done My Pink Half of the Drain Pipe, Alibaba's Camel, Hunting Tigers Out in India. It's not really ethical. We'll step away from that. Christy, any other questions you want to put to the Charles Collective? There we are, giving them a new name. See, the Charles Collective there, as in Dynamic Duo.
I'd like to know, are there any other consider
adapting? Or even adopting.
Or adopting,
two.
Yeah.
Well, on a serious note, we're considering sort of adapting the collection of Robert Service's poems about the Yukon to write just a full-length play about sled dogs in meter. Are you guys familiar with Robert Service?
He was a 19th century American poet. He wrote The Cremation of Sam McGee. A lot of poems about basically the expansion into Alaska during the Alaska Gold Rush. Really great stuff, but also very sort of like classic, simple rhyming couplet meters. So these very long, amusing poems. We've been, looking into adapting that to actually try to do an entire comedy show in verse centered around a team of sled dogs. That is in the works.
Frankly, I think the world is awaiting the release of this particular moment, and it will be just truly wondrous, and I feel blessed when Phil did that little introduction and said, let's make this happen, let's get it sorted through. Meanwhile, in the case of the Leersmeister, where you might like to just hear this little classic.
The truth is always out there, sometimes way out there, with the Midweek Drive team on Siren 107.3. FM.
Which brings us neatly around to those last two questions. Charles Armstrong and Charlie Stockman, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
Absolutely, sir. It's been fantastic.
That's okay. Actually, it sets you up nicely for the meeting that's coming up, you see. So that's critical from that point of view. So the next critical question is, can we look forward to connecting with you again in the very near future, possibly pre-Edinburgh, and who knows, probably when you're actually in the country in Edinburgh?
Absolutely.
That'd be wonderful.
That'd be great.
One darn thing after another, which is great. We will be spinning the drive time disc in a few moments, but not just yet. It's time for Phil Leonis' next step in the education of David Cassidy, the appreciation line. So here's David Cassidy with another little quaint, poignant number, Can't Go Home Again. Can we have a round of applause for the Charles Armstrong and Charlie Stockman, and of course CharlesComedy.net, please. Yay!
Thank you.
If you are lost in space, I'm sure you get home somewhere along the base.
Time and time again, I tried to get back to my hometown. On my mind again, I'm on my way back. Take a look, just can't go home again.
It was only a few weeks ago we were at the Great Yorkshire Show, of course, and we encountered those fabulous folk from the Happy Egg Company, and we're delighted to actually say that, making a very quick return to the programme, we're delighted to say it's Sheridan Mosley, the digital marketing executive extraordinaire from the Happy Egg Company, currently now in the New Forest in Hampshire. How are you, Sheridan? Welcome to the Midweek Drive.
Good evening, Alex. Thank you very much for having me on the show. How's everything with you guys? It's absolutely fabulous here with us.
Excellent. So, well, Eva MacDonald is currently in the Canary Islands. So the two co-presenters in the studio comprise the delights of Katie Dore and Christy Bond. And it's fair to say they're both Happy Egg people.
Oh, fantastic. Good evening to you both.
Christy, your thoughts on Happy Egg? You love the costume as much as anything else.
I love the advert with the chicken on the back of the tractor. I think it's amazing.
It's brilliant. Thank you very, very much.
Chicken with the back on the back of the tractor. It's astounding. And Katie, of course.
It's really important to me that my eggs are from happy chickens. Yeah.
We love hearing feedback like that. Thank you very, very much.
So you've got a phenomenal bus that's going around the scenario. Obviously, it was one of the highlights, as we said, of the Great Yorkshire Show this year. And now you're in the New Forest in Hampshire. And, of course, our wish that the weather is holding out has proven to be true. And it's all been good, I believe.
It's It's been absolutely amazing, Alex. The weather has held out, because we've been very fortunate to have more sunshine than clouds, which obviously then just really enhances the whole event for ourselves, as well as the visitors, as well as the children. And we've had loads of children this year, actually playing more outside than onside, inside the bus this year, so which is really, really lovely. We've also managed to win a second place in the trade stand prize, so really, really happy about that. And the judges came on board, absolutely loved our stand, and couldn't say one bad word about it, so it's been a really, really great turnout.
A round of applause for the good taste that's being shown by the New Forest people and the Happy Egg Company. Yay, winners!
Thank you.
All
Thank
around.
You very much.
I put it down to your own sort of media commitments personally, Sheridan. That's the important thing. Such a fine job there.
Oh, thank you.
There are free range farms, and then there are the Happy Egg Company free range farms. And of course, Happy Egg Company very picky about which farms are selected to become part of the Happy Egg Company family. It's all to do with ensuring that the chickens, of course, that give us the eggs, we're going to major biology here, but they're actually happy and they are free range.
Absolutely. We put a lot of effort into our farms, from basically the amount of land that the chickens have, to the activities that actually chickens have on the farms as well, from play kits to sand baths. Also as well, one of the farms has footballs for the chickens as well. And we've just recently conducted some research about what kind of music the chicken would like. And it turns out to be classical.
Mm. Yeah.
How do you research what music a chicken would prefer?
Very discerning, the chicken listener.
Well, I'm actually not on the research end of it, so I wouldn't be able to give you too much detail into that. But obviously, we have some really knowledgeable people doing that sort of research. And yes, I'd like to know how it's done myself, to be fair.
I think it's probably all to do with the number of clucks or pecks that they actually do, but we won't progress that too far, because you know, there's only so much strangeness you can actually have, and we've already had Moby Alpha in outer space, so you know, to take that round to chickens sort of deciding what's we've got Dean Martin with How Do You Like Your Eggs in the Morning coming up, so who knows what could happen with respect to that one. Still, Christy, questions from yourself.
I have a lovely story actually about chickens.
Do tell.
In my area, I come from Norwich originally, and there's a lot of chicken farms around there. And okay. there was this chicken farm, and they adopted a load of chickens that were taken from a battery farm, which is obviously awful.
Amazing.
And my nan enrolled in a program to actually knit jumpers for these chickens to keep them warm, because they didn't have any feathers. So I'd like to know, do you have your Happy Eggs chickens? Do they have jumpers?
No, we don't, but we'd absolutely love to have jumpers, and we'd love to have, like, maybe perhaps the I Love Happy Egg on the jumpers. That'd be amazing.
Yeah, it would.
That would be absolutely phenomenal. I'd love that. Yeah, please do get in touch, and then we can speak about that. Absolutely. I think that would be a great idea, because we also do rehome some of our chickens as well, so if we can send them to a good home with some jumpers, that would be amazing.
And we have to ask the question, how is Frieda? By the way, because obviously she was on good form at the Great Yorkshire Show. Is Frieda still doing the business in terms
Frieda's doing very, very, very well, Alex. She's even done a few dances over the last couple of days, so she's on extra good form this show.
Good heavens. You can find Frieda's blog, of course, on the happyegg.co.uk website, with all sorts of other areas, including Top of the Flocks competition winners, which, of course, was a wee while ago, White or Wrong competition winners, and, of course, Top of the Flocks. Music to our girls here. The first ever album for hens. I have to say, Sheridan, you kept very quiet about this. Clearly, we need to sort of address this whole thing and find out exactly what chickens ultimately like to go through. As you said, classical music from Mozart and Beethoven were pitted against the likes of Lady Gaga and One Direction. Well, please.
It would be a dance off, I think.
Exactly. And Guns N' Roses and Queen. The composers came out on top. 6% more eggs were laid in the nesting box playing classical music. And Isabel Peterson, who conducted the study with the University of Bristol, said, "We already know that hens are sensitive to noise, and that loud noises of 80 decibels or more can have a profoundly negative effect on them." I'd like to say it's the same for students as well. There we are. So, classic. Jack Ketch, who composed the album, said he's been composing music professionally for more than 15 years, but being asked to create an album for hens was definitely a first. Well, I think that's our next sort of sequence of shows sorted out then. And we'll continue working through that. Sheridan, have you wrapped up with respect to the New Forest, Hampshire today? Or are you, have you got another day tomorrow? What's, where does the Happy Egg Company and the bus and your good self move from here?
Yes, we've still got one day left at the New Forest and Hampshire show, and expecting quite a busy day as we've had quite a few returning visitors from yesterday, as well as the show predicts that the last day is one of the busiest days. So looking forward to it, and the weather's supposed to be amazing tomorrow, so that's all happy on our end. And then after the show, we will be then moving on to Pembrokeshire for a few days, and then as well as Chatsworth. And then our last show for the summer being Westmoreland.
Well, it's amazing. You can even from that, I've just seen, you can listen and download the album from the happyegg.co.uk website as well. You can tell it's really captured our imagination, this sort of thing. You know,
well, I'm glad it has captured your imagination, and I'm glad it really has appealed to you guys as well as everybody else has kind of visited the site and had a few comments about it as well.
It's the way forward. So the big question now, Sheridan, is we've got Mozart's Marriage of Figaro or Dean Martin featuring Helen O'Connell with How Do You Like Your Eggs in the Morning. Where are you going to go for the listener?
Oh, I'm going to go How Do You Like Your Eggs in the Morning.
So, last two questions for your good self. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today, Sheridan Mosley?
Thank you very, very much.
And will you return?
Oh, absolutely. I think, as I said to you at the last show, that I think there's one of very many more to come, as we are learning through each and every show that they all come with their different pros and different challenges. And I definitely feel that this project will grow from strength to strength. We definitely are looking at going to schools during the winter time, so that would be another dynamic that we're going to add to the project.
Quite clearly, I think the growth of the Happy Egg Company will match that of Siren and continue to go from strength to strength, which is great stuff. Sheridan, we salute you. Take care of yourself. We'll speak again very soon.
Thank you very, very much for having me, and nice to meet you both on the other end, and I hope to speak to you shortly.
How do you like your eggs in the morning?
I like mine with a kiss.
Boiled or fried?
I'm satisfied as long as I
eat. It's a Barnum and Bailey world. Just as phony as it can be. But it wouldn't.
Giant chicken.
Well, hello there. This is Phil Lairness, premier co-host of your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour, your friend in podcasting. Proudly introducing Emma Tinson, Jessica Ward, and Christy Bond, official Midweek Drive presenters for the ideal program to be hearing while you're steering on Siren 107.3 FM.
Well, okay, Jessica's in the Isle of Man and Emma's somewhere lost in London. Well, she's probably not lost, her mobile phone is. But we've got Katie, and that's got to be equivalent of a Jessica and an Emma, really, in one glorious Katie Dore.
Oh, that's a lot to live up to.
Oh, it's there. Isn't that right, Phil Lairness?
If you say it, it must be true.
We're working.
Thank you for taking the time to call me on the duly dedicated Siren FM hotline that I installed. I mean, that sounds like a joke, but the truth is, it's a red phone, probably. Well, it's an Incredibles phone. It's actually an Incredibles collector's phone. But it is a hotline, and I did have it installed as a landline specifically for my appearances on the Midweek Drive. When I tell people that, they say, oh, well, you know, we maintain landlines purely for emergency. And I said, well, that's exactly what I'm talking about, show business emergencies.
precisely. You know, who are you going to call? Phil Lernis. You know, it's that mask sort of thing. We might sort of think he's out there doing various other bits and pieces, but, well, he is. Ethan Dettmeyer, sad. We tried. We did try. I mean, you know, Christy will adhere to that. We had the big build-up. We had the A-team launching into the whole sequence, and we just got his voicemail. Never mind. So, have you enjoyed the show, Phil?
Yes, always. You know, look, problematic midweek drive is better than no midweek drive.
When you say problematic, what do you mean by problematic? I mean,
were you aware of the, now I don't know if this would have been a terrestrial feed problem, but it certainly was an internet feed problem where there was a lot of interference for the first half of the show. It was as if I was back, in a hotel room in the woods somewhere in the 1970s, attaching aluminum foil to the little aerial, trying to get the exact location that will allow me to get a very fuzzy, fuzzy reception of something out there. That was kind of what it was
and
like.
That's exactly the theme we were looking for on the show today. Well done.
Oh, excellent.
That's
excellent.
Giant chickens. Spot on. Yeah, I suspect it might have been, obviously the gremlins and the bugs getting into all sorts of things. Maybe it's all the excitement because Lily Holliman is in NCIS. Don't be confused with the dyslexic CSI. NCIS. New Orleans with Scott Bakula, amongst others. Yeah, in fact, I've even got some Scott Bakula tunes coming up as well to sort of celebrate that joy, which is wonderful. But apart from all of that, Phil, it's a delight as ever to welcome you to the show. I hope that you were happy with the spotlight that we put on charlescomedy.net in terms of Moby Alpha.
Well, that piece that you played about the more rock, less talk...
Yes.
I had never heard that. That was really funny. I mean,
did it make your mascara run?
I was. Yes, yes, and I better go catch it. See what I did there. That's the kind of comedy you can expect from the end of a really hard show for you to have produced. That was terrific. So funny, and I'm glad that they got introduced to your audience because. Yeah, they're the real deal. They're really funny and really delightful. And I certainly hope, Alex, you're able to make it to Edinburgh to see one of these shows because I know, I mean, quite frankly, you are the composite. When the marketing team, doing their research, came up with the composite picture of the Moby Alpha audience, it actually was like a criminal artist's rendering of a suspect, and it looked just like you.
Right. Okay. Fine. I hear what you're saying, my man. I won't progress any further.
But did also I've been, but I was, but I was thinking about you while also hearing that because did that bring you back at all in your days in broadcasting? I mean, especially, boy, I still have the images of the young. The suave, the charismatic, the cutting edge Alex Lefchuk doing 33 and a third hours of broadcasting to celebrate the end of vinyl. Mm-hmm. Did their comedy piece about FM radio bring you back at all?
I think one of the great things about good comedy, and that was what we were listening to from the Charles Comedy people, was that actually it hits and it accurately portrays certain caricatures of truthfulness. There's a very similitude about their stuff, which actually is quite painful at times, but at the same time you have to acknowledge that there are people who take this as a Bible. Yeah, it's a way forward. But there we are.
That's interesting. You know, this quite painful at times. Mm. I was in a meeting with a distribution executive and consultant, and we were talking about who I've known for a long time, and he was kind enough to watch The Lady Killers, and and it's a dark comedy, and the challenge about dark comedies is that if you've done them right, a lot of people, when they first see it, if they don't know a lot about the movie, will not even know it's a comedy. Audiences, especially with dark comedies, need permission to laugh. They need to be prepared to laugh. They need permission to laugh. So how do you market such a film? And it's one of the reasons why very few dark comedies are made and even fewer actually hit an audience upon initial release. And that's something, obviously, we want to do. And he actually said, you know, you need to celebrate how uncomfortable this movie is going to make everyone. That needs to be on the posters. That needs to be in the ads. The most uncomfortable film that will ever make you laugh.
I take that challenge, Phil. I take that challenge, and I'm going to actually bow latch to both Katie and Christy and the listener, and of course your good self, a little sort of series of my scores for three movies I actually saw on Friday. Okay, I saw three movies on Friday, and one of them was actually under conditions of extreme painfulness because the cinematic seat that I was sitting in obviously had been broken a long time ago, and I ended up sort of sitting on a plank, but it was a very packed house. Anyway, and that's one of the reasons why I gave one of these films 5 out of 10, one 9.5 out of 10, and one 10 out of 10. The movies, and your challenge, basically, folks, is to determine which score I gave to which movie, all right? So the movies were...
Well, I love anything, by the way, that takes, you know, 2 years of people's work and reduces it to scale of 10.
Exactly.
So please, by all means, let's continue this exercise.
Exactly so. You know, the movies were Ant-Man, Inside
That's
Out...
That's not a movie.
Inside Out. Inside Out and... A Royal Night Out, okay? A Royal Night Out, Ant-Man, and Inside Out. Which one, Katie, do you think...
Okay, wait a
second.
Wait a second. What's a Royal Night Out? No, I'm at a disadvantage here. What's that? A Royal...
A Royal Night Out, the day when Princess Elizabeth and Princess Margaret on VE Day effectively went out for the night and partied like there was no tomorrow. Okay? So
is this a serious film? Is this...
It's based on a true story when the royals actually went out. You don't listen to Richard Fitzwilliam's Royal Correspondence. Obviously not. You were busy working and all sorts of things. Anyway, A Royal Night Out, Ant-Man, and Inside Out. Which one do you think I gave the 6 out of 10 to, or the 5 out of 10?
I think it was Inside Out, because I don't picture you as a Disney Pixar hardcore fan.
Okay.
I'm gonna go with Ant-Man on that one.
Yeah, okay. Katie?
I'm going to go with Ant-Man, actually, on that one.
So you're 6 out of 10 for the Ant-Man and so on. Okay. Which one do you think I gave the 10 for?
I'm going to say
Inside Out.
Oh, God, I feel like I'm being ganged
up. Obviously, this is just my own opinion, and obviously it's a thing of moods. I just sort of wondering, how well do you actually know my particular tastes in this particular time?
I don't know, because with Ant-Man, because you're obviously a Marvel fan, you will either love it or hate what they've done with it. So I'm going to go with Ant-Man for the 10 out of 10.
Christy, you're absolutely right.
Oh.
Ant-Man, 10 out of 10. Inside Out, 9.5 out of 10. Would have got the 10 out of 10 had I not been sitting in a very, very uncomfortable scenario. And I think I might have to review that because it was so wonderful, etc. 6 out of 10, 5 out of 10 went to A Royal Night Out. I could not believe Dean Haglund giving a downer to Ant-Man.
You are the first person that I actually know who... Now, it's gotten mediocre reviews, but the audience score was good for it, although, of course, as we know, it's not performing well, so it's a smaller audience than the rest of the Marvel movies. But you're the first person I've known who has actually liked it, and it was quite disappointing to me. I haven't seen it, but it was quite disappointing to me because I had high hopes for it, but it really does seem, from what I've heard... to be the kind of mess you would expect when you fire a director midway through. And
you got the humor. You got Michael Douglas. You got Evangeline Lilly. You got the Scott Lang character of Ant-Man brought in a perfectly logical way. Even Mr. Rudd does a fantastic sort of line Paul Rudd. A wonderful sort of connection to the whole thing. You got the Stan Lee cameo, and you've got the Marvel tag at the end. It's superb. It's refreshed my mind completely. I gave it a full 10 out of 10.
Well, I will be seeing it at some point, you know, because they show movies on the back of seats on really, really long flights,
yes.
And you're a trapped hostage. So I will be seeing it and look forward to that viewing experience. But one must also take this with a grain of salt because you were way too forgiving. You're in the back pocket of Marvel. We already know this. You were way too forgiving of one of the worst films ever, which is the most recent Avengers movie. And you refused to accept the truth that if it weren't for Daredevil on Netflix, we could pretty much write off Marvel altogether.
No.
Their best days are behind. And you know why their best days are behind? Because they have worked out in advance by 10 years the films that they're going to make irrespective of having stories to tell. And, you know, and so it leads to really this kind of cookie cutter and assembly line storytelling, which is why Edgar Wright got into so much trouble. You know, he got into the famous creative differences with Marvel, and we know what those differences are. He's creative, they're not. So there you go.
I think you have to beg to differ on that particular one, really. I think the bottom line was Edgar spent far too long on
how do you let a night down? I'm looking at the reviews here. I mean, Alex, if you're not going to keep, if you're not going to support and keep the end up of British cinema, I mean, wow.
A royal night out, I'm afraid, and I think I'm very kind to that as well. At the end of the day, you can't really see Her Majesty the Queen, even when she was 18 years old, knocking out a bounce bouncer in a knocking shop in London, because she was, I mean, there's a kind of credibility gap that kind of just, you just tend to think, no, I don't think so. There were some nice attempts, really, in a kind of fictitious alternate reality version. Anyway, I've said my piece. You might have lots of other things to say about the show, Phil, and we'll talk more about that with Richard Fitzwilliams.
Look, when I see Ant-Man, if I enjoy it, if I side with you, I will give a mea culpa on the show, and I will take Dean Haglund to a full account.
I was very
saddened
with Dean's. I mean, he was in Australia. I could only imagine he was affected by the didgeridoo that you've actually put into the new Hollywood, Chilpack Hollywood theme.
Didgeridoo, didgeridon't. Oh, by the way, it is important to say at this point, since it is 29 July, year of our Lord 2015, many happy returns.
To Dean Haglund, exactly. Happy birthday, Dean Haglund. I wish him a happy birthday on Facebook. Collectively, we would like to say a 1, 2, 3.
Happy birthday.
Dean Haglund.
He's never been older than he is right now, but I must say he's never looked younger. This move to Australia and all this crazy travel has taken easily 10, 15 years away from him. He looks as young as he did when the Lone Gunman first appeared on the X-Files.
Clearly, Christy's just started watching the whole series from the time she was born. Have you not, Christy?
Yeah, I've just started rewatching them again, and I was saying about how young Gillian Anderson looks and how much David Duchovny needs a haircut, actually. And Alex was reminding me that they began the year I was born, which made me feel quite young.
It's fun to watch from the beginning and to see exactly when they realized they needed to start getting Gillian some flattering clothes. That's, for me, the real interest. But, you know, from those early ones, it is fascinating because she is so young. She was early 20s at that point and relatively inexperienced. And it's amazing to go back to those early shows and realize that, understandably, it took David Duchovny a while to find the character, to really find it. And, you know, somewhere in the middle of season 2, I would say, he really found it. And from there, it was you know, all speed ahead. But Gillian was in it from the very beginning. And for someone that young, it's just incredible from a professional standpoint. By the way, I just got some information when I was talking about how Dean has never looked younger. Lily Holloman just notified me that she believes he's had some work done.
Ooh. Lily, chill out. Otherwise, before you know where you are with that sort of negativity, you'll find yourself back dealing with sort of 1970s late hippies in a part of California that you didn't realize existed. You won't be having times in a bedroom in New Orleans, for goodness sakes, you know. By the way, that wasn't...
Wait a second. You're assuming... You called it negativity. I mean, you're assuming that she's not. Look, we live in Los Angeles. We're naturally quite encouraging of plastic surgery. You know, I mean.
Well, let's face it. Pamela Anderson was the original choice for the Dana Scully character. You know, it's strange.
Was she really?
That was
no.
Yeah, that was the line that Chris Carter has gone on record as saying, that he was asked by the suits to effectively say, we want more of a Pamela Anderson. It was just Gillian Anderson.
You know what's funny is Dean. After The Lone Gunman took off, and I think when Pamela Anderson had the TV series VIP, or VIP, as it's probably pronounced there in the UK, there was a magazine, and I don't know whether it was Wired or, you know, it was some big deal magazine, did a piece profiling the two of them, and it was called Television's Hot Blondes, and it was Pamela Anderson and Dean Haglund.
Just put it
in my and mind. They shared hair. They shared hair care tips and all of this stuff. It was
funny. VIP is one of the series I shall be watching once I've completed all five seasons of the A-Team. Up to season four now, so there we are. Very good. It's all signed up for that. Hopefully Dirk Benedict knows that he's got an agent who cannot be contacted in any way, shape, or form. So that's fine. Sorry, Ethan. We know you're there, and I'm sure you'll return somewhere, somehow, somewhere. Anything else you'd like to comment on? Did you appreciate the David Cassidy tune we put in for you earlier today? I was going to say David there. Of course, it's Phil.
Appreciated, yes.
Right, good.
Yes. Words are important, specific words even more important because they have meaning. And we don't want to say that appreciate is the exact same thing as enjoy, because certainly it is not. And yes, I appreciate it.
Exactly. You can't go home again. That's the important thing.
And, you know, what we learned, yet again, is the magic of Ethan Dettmeyer, which is that to make plans, a duly designated, appointed time and place and medium for connecting with Ethan Dettmeyer is almost like not making plans with Ethan Dettmeyer. So...
I thought after our birthday exchange, I thought, you know, he would have been... I mean, you know, the girls in the studio... The co-presenters, the drivettes, they've seen the exchange. Have you not, Katie?
We have. We have indeed.
Taken on good snow. Katie, would you like to give me a number between 2 and 27, please?
23.
Your age, then, obviously.
I wish.
I hope so.
A life coaching tip from the universe. The time will come, and it will be sooner rather than later, when your greatest admirers and protégés will look at your life, your achievements, possessions, and passions, frown a little and sullenly say, "Yeah, but for you, it was easy." At which point, you should conceal any yearning you may possess to either object or laugh hysterically. Instead, lovingly, look them square in the eye and say, "Yes, and it can be easy for you, too." Get used to it, the universe. P.S. You have much to teach.
There we are.
Hey, Alex, do you think as the duly designated voice of the universe, Mike Dooley has this to look forward to when his daughter is a teenager and she's rebelling against the authority of her father, as teenagers do? Do you think he will point out to her that she's not only rebelling against him, she's rebelling against the universe?
Well, you know, that is part of the cosmic journey on which we've been on, which took us through chickens and their favourite music, right the way through Anna Lewis and her gastroenteritis, Cameron Tilbury's Mo Pitney suggestion, Annette Andre with Little Birdies from California, the non-appearance of Ethan Dettmeyer, and, of course, the wonderful CharlesComedy.net, and, as we said, Sheridan Mosley. So, have you enjoyed the programme, Phil Dearness?
It has been... It has been an affair to remember.
Oh, very good. Like that. Christopher Beck's theme from Ant-Man coming up in the background just to wrap us up for this particular piece.
Yeah.
Oh, thank goodness. The wait is over.
Exactly. I'll take you neatly around to the news, followed by Alex Brown. Katie, have you enjoyed the programme?
It's been fun.
Back again next week?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, you could join us in the morning, of course. We've got the Director of Chartered Management Institute, Petra Wilson, together with Richard Fitzwilliams and more, 20 past midnight in Los Angeles time. Christy, enjoyed the programme?
I have loved the programme. Thank you, Alex. I got my first jingle. That was amazing.
It was very impressive, you know. In fact, two, technically, because you were, of course, mentioned, you know, in the other one. In fact, let's quickly do the little remix before we go for those last two questions with Phil. Let's see if we can actually squeeze in another Leonis impersonation, but the official line, with, of course, the fabulous theme from Ant-Man in the background. All action stuff going in its own sort of unique way. It'll happen. It will actually happen. Phil, I hope you're hanging on there with bated breath, ready for this to come through.
Oh, I can't wait.
Yeah, exactly. I know. Well, here it is.
Bond. Christy Bond. Not so much a first-class honors English graduate as a force of writing nature and a passionate supporter of rights. for mermaids.
You know, if that's not going to hit the Marvel mark, I really don't know what will. Christy Bond, Katie Dorr, thank you. Phil Leonis, thank you. Can we all say bye-bye?
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.